Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC, and I'm here with Mike Christel, PharmCom's Editorial Director. We are pleased to be joined today by AJ Loyacono, CEO of Capital Rx, a pharmacy benefit manager and technology company. AJ has over 20 years of entrepreneurial experience in the fields of pharmacy benefits, finance, and software development. Today, he and Capital Rx are looking to create an efficient market for prescription prices by removing what they say is the artificial wall between pharmacies and plan sponsors, while also taking the mystery out of drug pricing. AJ, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Nico. Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
So you've spent your career studying the pharma supply chain, and you actually started on the plant side doing supply chain software conversions. You then, from there, became a serial entrepreneur, helping launch three companies, the most recent one being Truveris, which conducted audit and procurement for large self-insured payers. Would you mind telling our audience more about your career story and what exactly drove you into getting into the PBM arena with Capital Rx?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you start at the beginning, obviously, not knowing where the journey will bring you. If someone told me 21 years ago I was going to end up helping manage a pharmacy benefit and software company, I would be like, that seems like an odd career choice. But, you know, go back 21 years ago. And so I started my career in pharmacy supply chain, working on the plant, doing supply chain software conversions with other engineers and administrators, and converting old MRP, MRP2 systems to ERP modules, et cetera. And I didn't realize at the time, it's pretty dry work, as you would imagine, but I was learning a tremendous amount about supply chain logistics and drug pricing, and it would later on serve me very well. After I moved away from the manufacturing side, I started a company that brought me to the opposite end of the supply chain. So now I'm working with payers and patients and PBMs, and you naturally believe, how different could this be? You know, we have drugs, we have drug prices, you administrate a benefit around these things. How different could it be? It is a different world. It is an entirely different set of skills on some level that you have to retrain yourself for. And, you know, I think when we started this process, you know, what we wanted to do on the payer side was to create software to help large payers like Fortune 500 companies and government entities, even health plans, help understand which vendor would administrate their benefit, the vendors being the PBMs, best. What is the offer they were providing, and then provide some monitoring around this. And, you know, what you quickly discover is a couple of things. You know, one, people are confused. Two, they're probably not getting what they thought they were getting. And it's horribly inefficient, everything about it. And one of the things that bothered me the most in this journey was coming from pharmaceutical manufacturing. I often talk about this. Everything has a price. You know, you have a pallet full of drugs sitting on a loading dock. It has a unit cost. It's being sold to McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal, and it moves down the supply chain. The wholesaler has a unit cost, and they in turn sell to hospitals and pharmacy chains, and they have unit prices they're buying the inventory for. And then you get to this last hop in the supply chain with the PBMs and the actual payers, and there are no drug prices. You know, you would read these contracts. The first time I read a PBM contract with a payer, and the first thing I noticed is I'm like, I must be missing a section of the contract. And I would ask my colleagues, is there an amendment or a schedule where the drug prices are? And they're like, oh no, AJ, we don't have drug prices. We describe drug prices and their averages over time. And these contracts are very complex. It's what is the definition of a single source, multi-source, DAW handling, limited supply. And I would just sit there and I'm just listening to them. And I'm like, you do realize everybody in the supply chain has a price except for you. And they're like, well, we can't get prices from the PBM. And I'm like, oh, well, we're going to fix this. And for 8 years, I tried. and I couldn't get pricing out of PBMs. They would be like, well, what am I going to do it for you? I mean, you know, they're just like, I don't care who you represent. Like, this is the way it works. This is how PBM works. And myself, my CTO, Ryan, and my COO, Joe, the three of us working together, we suddenly realized that the only way we were ever going to fix this industry would be to really tackle the problem at the root cause, which is the PBM. And we recognized it was a supply chain problem as well as a technology issue. And you had to address these things equally. Otherwise, I don't think you would be successful. So, you know, call it, it was a 18-year thesis I was working on. And I created Capital RX with my partners to address this issue.
Yeah, you told us in a kind of a pre-call conversation, which is kind of interesting that we captured this. You said that the mission of Capital RX is to kind of essentially put the power of the PBM into the hands of the people, you know, patients. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, let's take a step back. You know, just how crazy is drug pricing in the United States? And let's use the federal government. Now, if you follow drug pricing, you're a geek like me, and any report on it, the CBO had a report in February of 2021. Within that report, they took the time to kind of outline what different arms of the government pay for a prescription. Now, this is fascinating to me because think about the federal government. If you have a contract and you're like, look, I'm going to buy tanks or toilet seats or hammers, it's a unit cost. If someone told the federal government that you're going to buy a aircraft carrier for $10 billion 1 week and $20 billion the next week, they would be like, I need to talk to you, please. You know? But let's look at drugs. So in this report, you know, you take a look at a schedule of different drug prices. And it's basically saying, let's just say we have a $1,000 brand drug. It's a 30-day supply. Now, what does Medicare pay? And it's basically saying in this report about $500 net cost. And you're like, oh, that's not bad. And then you go to DOD and it's like $480. You're like, oh, that's not bad. And then you're like the VA, it's like $430. And then you're like, what's Medicaid? And it's like $300. And it's like, what's 340B? And it's $280. And I am like, how does the federal government have five different prices for the same darn drug? And so if the federal government is so twisted and confused, what chance does the average patient or payer have in the United States? And I want to ground this, you know, for everyone. And people will be like, well, it's different schedules. I don't agree with at all, because how should drug pricing work in the United States? It happens every day in a pharmacy. Go buy a bottle of Tylenol or Advil. Something magical happens. I talk about this all the time because people lose sight of this. The magic is it doesn't matter if you're insured or uninsured. It doesn't matter if you work for the biggest employer or the smallest employer. Everyone pays the same darn price. And it doesn't change. Like someone comes into the store an hour later and Tylenol is suddenly 30% more expensive and then 12% cheaper and then 40% more expensive. What happens when a patient walks 30 feet back to go get a prescription filled in a pharmacy, the entire world changes. It's like spinning a roulette wheel. I often compare it to this. What is the chance event? Am I today's winner or loser in a system where we have variable pricing at the sole discretion of the carrier, the PBM, or what other entity is providing and administrating that benefit? And it shouldn't work this way. One of the things that we point out is that drug pricing, when you want to put the power of the PBM in the patient's hands, is I want them to understand price. I want price to be the last thing someone has to worry about at the register. I would love to see a system where it's a fair price. You know, I say this all the time. When buyers and sellers freely communicate on price, price settles itself. The problem in the US supply chain in pharmaceuticals, unfortunately, is we don't have fair and efficient communication in that last hop. Buyers and sellers are prevented from talking together. It is incredibly opaque. And even sophisticated buyers like the federal government end up with schedules that are oftentimes 40 to 70% different in prices. There it is.
So obviously, as you're saying, it's a transparency and communication kind of issue. So, I was wondering, your efforts there, CAPRX, or kind of wanted to get your take on some of these similar wider efforts out there, and kind of find out from you, are these, like, you know, for one example is, you know, Mark Cuban, he likes to get involved in a lot of different ventures. The Dallas Mavericks owner, you know, launched a generic drug company recently, and they have started their own PBM, citing, as you do, the need for like an ethical pricing system. Is this all part of an effort maybe to remove the reliance on traditional PBMs in the equation? What's your take on some of these other efforts out there?
No, I don't believe that companies that are 50 plus years old are going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they control massive markets of patients. And to be fair, at this point, no one's last name is Cigna, or no one's initials are CVS, you know, at this point. The people that form these companies have moved forward. So the business models they have are simply business models that they have inherited as managers and have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to manage. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's actually good management. They would actually be, I think, in trouble if they didn't do the best they can with the model that they have. What I do see is that there are lots of companies out there, including ourselves, that are looking at creating efficiency, but efficiency on price is short-lived. I think we're going to get to efficiency on price fairly quickly in this country. I think the federal government is looking at it very closely for the first time. And people say, well, why now? And I say, go back 21 years ago with me. You know, you'd be lucky if pharmacy benefits was 5% of total healthcare dollars. You know, now in some of clients, it could be 20 to 40%, depending upon their size, demographics, and spend. So it's become very important. And so when we look at the business model of pharmacy benefits, I think there's pressure from both the regulatory and legislative sides. I think there's pressure even from the press and people asking pointed questions. I think there's innovation like ourselves that are trying to help solve this. But why do you want to do this? Is you want to move to better outcomes, better service, better patient experience. Price plays a point or component in this. But when we expend all this effort trying to keep up with this very overly complex system, we're missing an opportunity to engage with our patients and take care of our patients. And that's always been our process. So as I talked about earlier, part of it is a supply chain problem. And I think this is solving itself. I think it's too big of an issue that it's going to go unaddressed. And I think eventually we're going to move forever in the right direction. This will be like every other industry. If you think about it, no one describes the terms of payment, you know, for my mortgage of what it would be. They give me a number. No one tells me in descriptions what the price of a car would be. They give me a number. We buy with numbers in the United States, and we have clarity on what's a good price. And I think this is going to come. The other part of this is efficiency and service. And we have these aging systems that are completely inflexible. They can't contemplate the current benefit structure, let alone the future. And what you need is a system that helps create efficiency so you can spend more time, engage with the patient, and also utilize advanced systems to help monitor and flag when a patient needs an intervention or something is going wrong. Statistically, we need to look at this. And this is what we're missing. And this is what we've invested so much money in. It's not just about processing claims and setting up a benefit. It's looking at every work stream, every workflow. How do I make it more efficient so I can expend the resources on the patient and the plan side? And I think this is part of that equation. I think a lot of people want to tackle healthcare and solve problems and pharmacy benefits. And I think the market is vast and I welcome everyone to the table. I think what people often overlook is it's not just about pricing. You need to have the tech platform to handle all these administrative workflows and think about what the true future of healthcare and pharmacy benefits is.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned before there's some confusion sometimes about drug prices and how much they've changed. It's kind of difficult to keep on top of that or what, you know, what sources are accurate. And just want to kind of get your take. Like as far as list prices, wholesale drug prices, are they really constantly changing, or and how much have they really fluctuated? And do you think drug pricing is relatively stable at this point in time?
This is a great question, because you know what's funny? If you've ever been an auditor and you've looked at claims data, and I've looked at claims data for literally thousands of companies at this point in my career, because I used to do it. We used to run systems that used to audit claims loads for the largest payers in the country and some of the largest health carriers. And so when you look at any claims data feed, I don't care who it is, it looks like drug prices are changing every hour of every day for every pharmacy, for every prescription. Is that a truthful statement? Absolutely not. Drug prices in the United States is incredibly stable. Brand drugs change maybe twice a year, typically January and July, clockwork. And generic drugs are deflating. They deflate every quarter, pretty much, depending upon your purchasing schedule. But it's important to remember, there's no risk in generic drugs. The prices keep going down. And so really, we have an incredibly stable drug system in the United States. It appears to be chaotic and a mess, and people can't understand it because, to be frank, the system doesn't support transparency. So one of the things that we did at Capital Rx, we created our clearinghouse model, is there's really two key components to it. One, like my bottle of Tylenol, everybody gets the same price. And I want everyone to just pause for a second. In pharmacy benefits, big plans get better pricing, and medium plans get okay pricing, and small plans get so-so pricing. And unfortunately, the uninsured are punished the most in this system. And it's a horrible way for us to operate as a country. And so the first part of the clearinghouse model is go back to Tylenol or a jar of mustard or sneakers, you get the same price. I don't know why we have this sudden disparity at the register. Like, well, today, unfortunately, you're the loser and your price is a little bit higher. Yours a little bit lower. Everyone gets the same price. The next thing is everyone can see price. So what we did is we contracted with our networks. We used NADAC pricing, National Average Drug Acquisition Cost. We use it because it doesn't sit behind a paywall. Everyone can access it. It's used in Medicaid reimbursement in 30 plus states and growing. And most importantly, it reflects generic deflation. You know, AWP is the other benchmark that most of the country uses for contracting purposes. And AWP looks like it's inflating slightly each year. But the reality is generics on average for the last 6 years have been deflating 10% year over year, like clockwork. And so this is important to remember, is you want to create a system of prices. It's a clearinghouse. You should be able to have an NDC 11. What is the unit price? What is this drug? And now you can make informed decisions as a consumer. There's a slight difference between pharmacy A and B, or if I have it delivered to my house, or I look at 90-day supply, let the patient make that decision with their physician, obviously, if it's allowed. But this is important to remember, is you don't want to create inefficiency around pricing. You want the market to just settle itself. And we don't make money on fulfillment. I like to point this out. We make no money on retail, mail or specialty. We charge a flat administrative fee, which I think if you're an administrator is probably the appropriate way to manage a benefit, because then you have no conflicts of interest. Once you have variable compensation, things can get cloudy. And I want to make it clear, this is our belief. I think there's lots of ways to administrate a benefit, but we're having great success with it. And I think others will slowly move in this direction, by hook or by crook, as they say, which might be pushed in that direction by legislative or regulatory oversight, or they might do it because the market demand is there. It may take time. Some people say it may never come. I tend to think the U.S. consumer is fairly sophisticated, and there comes a breaking point for any marketplace.
Interesting. And I think this is a good segue, because I know you've described to us previously that you describe your business model as it relates to your technology platform known as Judy, which you've mentioned is considered the industry's first enterprise pharmacy platform, or EPP. Could you get into more detail on that, and maybe how it simplifies the layers between payers, pharmacies, and manufacturers? Could you kind of explain that for the listeners?
Yeah. So when we started our company, I think anyone who says, hey, I'm going to change pharmacy benefits or improve it, you know what I mean? You'd be fooling yourself if you didn't have at a minimum a five-year business plan. You know, there's no shortcuts in this industry. And it takes a huge amount of investment dollars, depending upon what you're trying to tackle and which segment. But what we recognized very quickly was that the software that was available to the industry, off-the-shelf stuff for claim processing, was one, incredibly inefficient, two, very costly to maintain. It wasn't cloud-based, didn't scale well. It was very inflexible. So you tend to say no a lot to clients and patients, and that's not a good place to be. You have no future on this platform because, like, examples I give is the future of pharmacy care, I think, is precision medicine. You know, we have a system today in the United States where it's a one-size-fits-all formulary. That kind of sounds weird. Every single person behaves the same way for the same therapy in the same classes. My sister and I are genetically similar, but we behave differently to different drugs still, and we have different therapeutic needs. So why would we have a one-size-fits-all formulary? So that's just one example of how do you address these things? You have to build for it. What we recognized while we were building out software is also software today really just addresses a very narrow banding of pharmacy benefit services. It is plan setup and claim adjudication. That's a fancy term for claim processing, the electronic ballet between the pharmacy and the carrier to see if someone's eligible, what their copay or deductible should be, what the price of the drug, the ingredient cost, as well as all the drug utilization review and safety checks, et cetera, that goes on in that split second at the counter. But what you realize when you're operating a PBM is there are hundreds of tasks going on in the background, everything from underwriting to implementation to call center integration, clinical workflows that include prior authorization, as well as step edits, overrides, interventions. You look at your APAR team. It's both your network management, network reimbursement, client billing, and the entire industry scaled through people. Now, people would say, well, why did that happen? And I often point out there's never been a bad day in pharmacy. It is an inelastic demand curve. Pharmacy is better than energy services. It doesn't budge. Patient utilization has held rock steady for 20 plus years. And oh yeah, prices typically, list prices go up year over year. And so it's the perfect model. So when you have no market pressure, no market volatility, and your top line magically goes up, even if you don't sell any new business, you don't innovate. You basically enjoy the status quo. And you saw company after company just hire more and more people to manage services that any other industry that was in a competitive marketplace that has ebbs and flows of market volatility has to lean up. They've got to look in and be like, how do I do this better, faster? How do I engage with my customer better? They never had to do it. And so when we built out Judy, it was to, one, operate across all of these workflows, create tech-enabled workflows to every end of the business. Now, think about my background. What's the difference between an MRP supply chain platform and an ERP platform? Very simply, the ERP platform handles more workflows. And that's exactly what we wanted to do when we wanted to build an enterprise platform, is it's not just about claim processing anymore and plan design. It's about everything. Every single thing, API libraries to link up hundreds of different vendors. I think the health ecosystem has become a universal world where lots of different vendors engage with payers. So someone might have Livongo or Virta or Guardian Nurses or third party review companies. They might carve out certain services. We take the approach, who cares? In fact, let me empower and make those connections on the data exchange. And so we have a very robust API library for every workflow inside. So this is a, you know, again, a fancy way of saying someone wants to know how to read an eligibility sequence from us. We create that for, obviously, a vendor that is approved by the payer, and you make it as seamless and as easy as like a plug and play environment as possible. Now, each night right now, we broadcast to over 560 unique independent entities. That can be everything from brokers to stop loss carriers, TPAs, data warehouses, third party apps. That's a lot, but that's the modern healthcare world. And it's going to continue to expand. And this is, again, an example of you need a modern tech stack and you need the efficiency to keep up where healthcare is going.
Is the thought being that gaining these efficiencies in workflow can bring more context to like the true price of drugs?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, if you think about it, is you want to start with, call it an ethical or efficient pricing framework where buyers and sellers communicate, and price is no longer a question in the United States of how much does a drug cost. It should be like a can of Pepsi, you know, at this point. You know what a fair price is. You know you're not getting bamboozled by somebody. You know it's a fair price. Where you want to suddenly focus on the tech stack side is, well, what's going on with that patient? Are they a new start? What's the adherence on this patient? Do they need a reminder? Are they taking other drugs and we need to do a check-in? These are the kind of things where you want to be spending time with the patient. And I also think that if you provide good services, I think carriers and other people will rely less upon the old world economics of spread pricing and some of the heavy-handedness that is perceived in the system today. I think the future state is efficiency.
Well, AJ, Mike and I really do appreciate you coming on the PC podcast today to talk about all things drug pricing and the role that PBMs can play in this. You know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the next 10, 15, couple decades even, to see really how this legislation takes place and just the new rulings that come on. So we really appreciate you joining the show today, and I guess we'll see what happens these next few years.
No, thank you so much. I think we're going to have a lot to discuss in just the next couple of years. I don't think we're going to have to wait a decade to see much of the impact from both innovation and legislation. So look forward to monitoring it. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.